leader!
Order, order.
There are seven political parties in the current parliament, representing a spectrum going from one extreme to the other, left to right. But with this parliament, like the last, it helps to swap the spectrum for a spirit level, with a bubble in the middle that shows which way the House is leaning at any one time. In this parliament, the bubble moves left or right depending on the views of three MPs, Te Uru Flavel and Marama Fox in the Maori Party, and United Futures' Peter Dunn. All three are electorate MPs, and their combined party vote in the last election is tiny in relation to the decisive role that they can play in the House. Last week, they withheld their support for the government's Employment Standards Legislation Amendment Bill until the government caved in and adopted amendments advanced by Labour and supported by the Greens and New Zealand First that purged the legislation of wording allowing 0 hours contracts or their equivalents. Their three votes were critical to National, which even with the ACT Party's David Seymour was one short of the 61 needed for a majority, and to the three main opposition parties, which with a combined tally of 58, were three short of the magic 61. By accepting that if you can't beat them, join them, National avoided a vote on that bill, and the two Maori Party MPs and Peter Dunn were not required to choose sides. This week, though, the bubble moved back the other way, when Marama Fox cast her party's two votes with National to defeat a members' bill.
Our decision that we have come to has been a decision that we have made and had great debate about within the Māori Party and is no way influenced by the government in this instance.
It nevertheless saved the government from another defeat on a members' bill, a fairly innocuous one on the surface, amending the Act that established the Environment Protection Authority, the EPA, to add a clause making it plain that the authority's purpose is to protect, maintain and enhance New Zealand's environment. While Parliament is no stranger to tautology, the layman might wonder what an Environment Protection Authority might do other than protect the environment, as noted by Labour's Wigram MP Megan Woods in Wednesday's second reading debate.
Mr Speaker, never before have seven words produced such hysteria with the government in their reaction to this bill. The simple trying to insert into the Environmental Protection Authority's legislation the fact that it should protect the environment.
Ironically, the government picked up on that argument, saying that protection of the environment was such an obvious goal for the EPA that it didn't need to be spelt out in a special purpose clause. National also believed that there were better ways of achieving the same end, a view shared by Marama Fox.
This bill, in and of itself, to change some wording, I don't believe, and we are of the opinion, will not go far enough to ensure that that happens. So we look at to the other bills that are surrounded that have some effect in this area.
Most significant among them, for Marama Fox, was the Resource Management Act, currently the subject of intense scrutiny in party caucuses as the government tries to build a majority for its proposed amendments. They're in the Resource Legislation Amendment Bill, now with the Government and Environment Committee, on which National MPs used their majority to recommend that McAfeitery's EPA Amendment Bill not proceed any further. Drawn from the members' ballot almost exactly a year ago, it was sent to the committee after surviving its first reading by 61 votes to 60, the bubble moving its way thanks to Marama Fox's Maori Party.
We normally support the introduction of bills to first reading so that submitters can come.
Of the 206 submissions, all but eight supported the bill, but that overwhelming majority in the committee room evaporated in the chamber when the bill was reported back for its second reading on Wednesday night. It was defeated by the 62 of National, ACT and the Maori Party, defeating the 59 of Labour, the Greens, New Zealand First and United Futures' Peter Dunn. His vote could be critical on the next Members' Day, scheduled for Wednesday, April the 6th, if the Healthy Homes Guarantee Bill No. 2 comes up for its first reading, which it's likely to do, as it's now at the top of the members' order paper. It's Labour's second shot at legislation ensuring that every rental home in New Zealand meets minimum standards of heating and insulation. The first bill, in the name of their housing spokesman Phil Twyford, failed to pass its first reading back in March last year after National's Northland MP Mike Sabin had resigned, reducing the total number of MPs to 120. And the debate ended with National and ACT dead-heating 60-60 with Labour, the Greens, New Zealand First, the Maori Party and Peter Dunn. A second bill, this time in the name of Labour's leader, Andrew Little, was drawn from the ballot last October, but immediately ran into trouble after the Speaker decided it was not sufficiently different to get around a rule preventing defeated bills coming up again in the same calendar year. Mr. Carter threatened to rule it out of order if it came up for debate before Christmas, drawing an angry reaction from Andrew Little and his Chief Whip, Chris Hipkins. Their comments in the media implied that the Speaker, who's a National MP, had been trying to save his party's government from the embarrassment of a defeat in the chamber, with the opposition's ability to muster a majority restored by the election of New Zealand First Leader Winston Peters as the new member for Northland. Complaints that the comments raised questions of privilege were referred to the Privileges Committee, although Mr. Little subsequently apologised to the Speaker on the last sitting day of the year.
In recent weeks, statements have been made by members on this side of the House about you, which reflect upon you, and I wish to draw to the attention of this House that correspondence has gone to the Chair of the Privileges Committee today, accepting that those comments were unparliamentary and expressing regret for them.
The Privileges Committee's report, recommending that the House accept Labor's expressions of regret, was tabled in the Chamber this week. Privileges Committee reports are usually debated the day after they're tabled, but the Business Committee decided that wasn't necessary in this case. So everyone lived happily, if not ever after, at least until the next sitting week, which is not until after Easter. And for a preview of that week, here's the Leader of the House, Gerry Brownlee.
When the House resumes on Tuesday the 29th of March, the government will look to make progress on the New Zealand Business Number Bill and first readings of the New Zealand Horticultural Export Authority Amendment Bill and the Wildlife Powers Amendment Bill and also progress on committee stages on the order paper.
Mr. Brownlee delivering his weekly business statement on Thursday before question time when he was required to answer for his Prime Minister to defend Mr. Key's failure last December to reveal that so-called jihadi brides travelling to Syria were leaving from Australia, not New Zealand.
As New Zealand citizens, it doesn't matter where they leave from. If they pose a security risk to New Zealand on their return, then that is something we are concerned about.
Mr. Brownlee's Cabinet colleague Stephen Joyce, meanwhile, answered questions for Finance Minister Bill English, including this one from New Zealand First MP Fletcher Tabateau.
Does the Minister not think that his current apathy and silence on New Zealand dairy farmers opens this government up to the very reasonable label of fair weather friend?
The Order, the Honourable Stephen Joyce.
Well, Mr. Speaker, on behalf of the Minister of Finance, I think there are some parties that could be called fair-weather friends of the dairy sector, but it isn't this one, Mr. Speaker.
The nation's cow cockies found themselves at the centre of a tug of war as news of lower milk prices on Tuesday had the government and the opposition vying to be their best friends in times of hardship. This question for the Prime Minister, John Key, from opposition leader Andrew Little.
Will he just level with me for a moment and tell me whose side is he on? New Zealand dairy farmers or the overseas-owned banks?
The Right Honourable Prime Minister.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I'm on the side of New Zealanders 365 days of the year. That's how the House wanted higher health and safety costs. These are the people that don't want irrigation schemes, don't want the RMA reform, don't want free trade agreements. Mr. Speaker, this is a joke. These people are not the friends of the farmer. These are the people that are trying to put them out of business.
What a order, sir.
Mr. Key himself nearly got put out of business by the Speaker.
Order, Prime Minister. If you want to remain for question time, stop interjecting when I'm on my feet.
And the Labor leader's attacks on banks and their interest rates prompted Finance Minister Bill English to kick off Wednesday's general debate with this confession.
I never thought I would say this, but I'm missing Russell Norman. Russell Norman, long gone to run Greenpeace, was a moderate, sane, predictable economic voice in this House.
And with Bill English telling the Greens' former co-leader to come back, all is forgiven but not forgotten, we leave the debating chamber for the committee rooms and Rhys Lyon.
A government commissioned study on the costs of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement has been labelled flawed and an embarrassment by economist Dr. George Barker. Speaking to the Foreign Affairs and Trade Committee's treaty examination of the TPPA, Dr. Barker criticised the author of the study, which formed the basis of the government's cost-benefit analysis around copyright provisions in the trade deal.
So the study was done in 2009 by an Australian economist, Henry Urgas, and only released in November. As soon as I saw the number that the government was citing based on that external report, I realised it was just didn't pass what economists call the laugh test. It's the equivalent of saying to someone, what's 1% of New Zealand's population, which should be around 400,000, and they come back and tell you it's 400 million. It's literally the same mistake. It's not a question of assumptions or technical economics. It's just an arithmetic error, fundamentally, and a big one, an enormous one.
Dr. Barker alleged the error grossly overestimated the costs of copyright term extensions in the TPPA and ignored their benefits, and had been missed by government officials.
And the point to make about Urgas is they never had Urgas's study peer-reviewed, and now they can't find the data. So I've asked for the numbers to cross-check how he made the mistake, because I think he put the decimal point somewhere in the wrong place. But the ministry is saying they can't find the data. His company has gone bankrupt. It went bankrupt in 2009. It is an enormous embarrassment as a Kiwi living in London to have to front up and explain to people what the New Zealand government is doing here.
Dr. Barker urged the committee to recommend the government correct the error.
Because it's been picked up around the world. New Zealand government estimate is now being quoted in Europe. The media around the world picking up this number. And because it says in the national impact analysis, the New Zealand government conservatively estimates, it's just feeding the argument against copyright and the anti-copyright movement. This is literally a mathematical error, and it's time to admit it.
Director for the Centre of Law and Economics at the Australian National University, Dr. George Barker. And another submission on the TPPA came from Smoke Free Coalition Executive Director Dr. Prudence Stone, who questioned the effectiveness of the trade deal's restrictions on tobacco companies suing the government through Investor State Dispute Settlement, or ISDS, clauses.
Some in my sector have called this a major win. The Smoke Free Coalition believes this win is not major but hollow. An ISDS carve-out for tobacco does nothing to prevent the tobacco industry from financially supporting state-to-state disputes, as Philip Morris currently does now to ensure Indonesia, Cuba, Honduras, and the Dominican Republic dispute Australia's plain packaging legislation for tobacco products.
Dr. Stone warned the government against the pressures of tobacco industry lobbying.
It is cynical to cry out for foreign trade protections when you're a multi-billion dollar multinational corporation with more resources than the governments you ask protections from. It is the public's health and the environment that need protection. Protection through strong regulation of industries that will not conduct their business ethically. If it hurts their bottom line, we must remind ourselves, bottom lines don't have hearts and minds. They are profit margins that are not as important as people.
Smoke Free Coalition Executive Director Dr. Prudence Stone speaking to the Foreign Affairs, Defence and Trade Committee on Thursday. A day earlier, the Government Administration Committee heard submissions on a members' bill in the name of Labour's Sue Moroney calling for an extension of paid parental leave. While the passing last week of the new employment standards legislation will see an increase in paid parental leave from 16 weeks to 18 weeks, Ms. Moroney's bill aims for 6 months paid leave. UNICEF's Deborah Morris-Travers told the committee that 26 weeks was the ideal period for breastfeeding mothers.
I don't actually think that there's an argument that can be made against paid parental leave, given all of the evidence in favour of it and given the very clear public health benefits of enabling that 6 months uninterrupted breastfeeding time.
Ms. Morris-Travers explained the benefits of higher breastfeeding rates.
We've got a real problem, actually, because we've got lung infections at a rate of 7 to 8 times the OECD average, and children with scarred lungs, because they're not breastfed and because they're living in cold, damp, mouldy houses and in poverty. So there's a real interest economically.
UNICEF's Deborah Morris-Travers with that submission on the Parental Leave and Employment Protection, 6 months paid leave and work contact hours amendment bill, which is due to be reported back to the House by April the 28th. In total, there were 15 committee meetings held during the week.
That report from East Lyon. Friday was Brent Smith's last day as Parliament's Sergeant-at-Arms, retiring after 14 years, in which he missed only 1.5 days due to illness. More about the face behind the mace when we talk to Brent next Sunday. I'm Tom Frewen, and this programme was made with funding from Parliament.